Porque la integración de nuestros pueblos, como la entendían Bolívar y Artigas, no es simple quimera de los hombres, sino inexorable decreto del destino.
Por su parte, el primer mandatario venezolano Hugo Chávez Frías habló sobre la necesidad de hacer profundos cambios al bloque regional de Mercosur.
Se requiere un nuevo Mercosur, una nueva arquitectónica del Mercosur, como ya lo hemos dicho, que salga de los límites del mercantilismo económico. Esos límites son una trampa. Dentro de esos límites no se van a solucionar las contradicciones ni los antagonismos. Hay que transitar hacia un nuevo modelo de complementación económica. Ese es un elemento clave de la fórmula.
En noticias de Medio Oriente, miles de sirios se reunieron ese miércoles en la plaza Omeya de Damasco para enviar un mensaje de respaldo al ejército y a la policía de su país, que ejecutan acciones para enfrentar la violencia que por meses azota a la nación. Los manifestantes también expresaron su apoyo al gobierno del presidente Bashar al-Assad. La movilización en Damasco ocurre poco después de que la televisión rusa reportara soldados de Estados Unidos y otras naciones de la OTAN en la frontera de Jordania con Siria. También se ha reportado el traslado de combatientes islámicos derechistas aliados a Washington en Turquía, cerca de la frontera siria. En Colombia, el próximo 20 de enero, la Fiscalía imputará cargos contra Carlos Restrepo, el excomisionado de paz durante la gestión del presidente Álvaro Uribe. Restrepo deberá responder a la falsa desmovilización de un frente de las FARC, uno de los grupos guerrilleros del país. La supuesta desmovilización ocurrió en 2006, cuando fueron presentados falsos guerrilleros en una zona rural.
No tiene la Fiscalía ninguna prueba para presentar contra mí. Los avances que ha habido en el proceso es porque yo mismo los he exigido. Hay unos delincuentes que ya confesaron que engañaron al Estado y lo hicieron para beneficiar a un hermano suyo que estaba en la cárcel. Por solicitud mía, la Fiscalía pidió retirar hace unos 20 días los beneficios económicos que estaban recibiendo, pero si esos delincuentes engañaron al Estado, la primera víctima soy yo, que representaba al Estado. Entonces siempre le he dicho a la Fiscalía que estoy dispuesto a responder en la investigación, y sería bueno que se aclarara cómo fue posible que estos señores engañaran a la inteligencia del ejército, engañaran a la misma Fiscalía, porque también engañaron a la Fiscalía, al programa de reincorporación, y por supuesto yo era la cabeza política del gobierno. Pero son delincuentes. Desmovilizamos 50.000 personas que estaban al margen de la ley, matando, mintiendo, robando. Que haya algunos que hayan seguido mintiendo, pues es comprensible. Lo que no tiene ninguna presentación es que la Fiscalía quiera presentarme ahora como un delincuente y que me acuse incluso de tráfico de armas. Eso es totalmente absurdo y me siento atropellado por esta decisión de la Fiscalía.
Y sobre afirmaciones sobre un presunto montaje sobre la desmovilización del mencionado grupo guerrillero, Restrepo responde categóricamente:
falso, nunca hicimos un comentario de ese tipo. Además, no tenía por qué hacerlo. El presidente Uribe tenía una popularidad altísima. No necesitábamos de una desmovilización de esas bajo ninguna circunstancia. Esa desmovilización la hicimos porque el ejército nos informó que había una estructura que quería desmovilizarse. Todo parece indicar que había unos guerrilleros que sí lo eran y otros que engañaron al Estado. Y desde el momento se habló de irregularidades. Pero quien debía investigar era la Fiscalía, no yo. Yo le entregué a estos señores a la Fiscalía, porque es lo que establece la ley. La Fiscalía los investigó, en su momento no encontró ninguna evidencia de falsa desmovilización, incluso les dio beneficios jurídicos. Solo hasta ahora aparecen unos de ellos confesando que realmente engañaron al Estado, pero nosotros no teníamos ningún interés. Le cuento, esa semana yo tuve 5 desmovilizaciones más, algunas de ellas de 2.000 personas. ¿Qué interés tenía yo de desmovilizar otro grupo adicional? Entonces, eso es simplemente un comentario que hacen los opositores del gobierno, pero que no tiene ningún fundamento.
En lo que va a supuestas irregularidades cometidas por los militares, el excomisionado de paz colombiano dice no tener evidencia de tal cosa.
No, a mí no me consta que ningún funcionario gubernamental haya actuado con dolo o mala fe. Si me engañaron a mí, engañaron igual al ejército de Colombia. Yo le he pedido al doctor Juan Manuel Santos que desclasifique la información en relación con esa desmovilización, porque en este momento el Ministerio de Defensa la mantiene guardada y que desclasificada como información de seguridad nacional. Yo le he pedido que la desclasifique y que se la entregue al país, para todos nosotros, incluso yo mismo, saber por qué el ejército llegó a esa conclusión de que realmente esa estructura existía y por qué creyeron lo que estaba sucediendo. Pero yo no dudo de la mala fe de los generales. Le he pedido eso sí a los generales, que le den la cara al país, como se la estoy dando yo, y que si hubo un engaño, pues reconozcamos que nos engañaron y hagamos los ajustes respectivos dentro del Estado para que esto no vuelva a suceder.
¿Y qué tanto hay de verdad sobre la pertenencia real de los guerrilleros desmovilizados con las Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, las FARC? De nuevo, Carlos Restrepo, excomisionado de paz durante la gestión del presidente Álvaro Uribe.
No, todo parece indicar que hay un grueso número de ellos que sí era de las FARC. De hecho, han reconocido delitos supremamente graves y están siendo procesados por ellos. Pero para obtener beneficios adicionales, sobre todo un grupo, tres miembros de una familia que son los Pacheco Ramos, buscaron unos guerrilleros que al parecer no lo eran y que ya han confesado que engañaron al Estado. Entonces hay que diferenciar los dos elementos. Es decir, unos guerrilleros que sí, evidentemente todo el mundo reconoce que lo eran, muy peligrosos además, y otros, por supuesto, que engañaron y habrá que ver qué tanto sabían unos y otros de lo que estaba pasando.
El coraje, la rebeldía, cualidades volitivas mías, tal como lo suponían después de un buen aprendizaje, notas se sobresalen como aguas de manantiales.
Esta semana se conmemora el Día Internacional del Migrante y con motivo de esa fecha dedicamos de este programa a los millones de hombres y mujeres de todo el mundo que se ven obligados a viajar a otros países en busca de su sobrevivencia. Escuchemos.
Limosneros de sus hijos e hijas.
A continuación, nuestro boletín económico de fin de año.
El Salvador. Los dólares enviados por los migrantes superan ya todos los rubros de exportación del país. Estas divisas cubren el déficit comercial y constituyen el principal flotador de la economía del país.
Guatemala. Los guatemaltecos y guatemaltecas residentes en el exterior sostienen con sus remesas a más del 30% de la población. Estos envíos de dinero desde el exterior son la principal fuente de divisas, por encima de las exportaciones y el turismo.
México. Este año, las remesas alcanzaron la cifra récord de 25 mil millones de dólares. México ocupa el primer lugar mundial en envíos de dinero por parte de los trabajadores y trabajadoras migrantes a sus familias.
Esa maldición del Tratado de Libre Comercio arruinó la agricultura. Yo cultivaba maíz y, mira, tuve que venir a vender pizzas aquí en Los Ángeles.
Ecuador. La dolarización expulsó del país a 1 millón de ecuatorianos y ecuatorianas. Este año, esos migrantes enviaron más de 3 mil millones de dólares a sus familiares, lo que representa la segunda fuente de ingresos del país.
En Perú, el dinero que envían los migrantes estabiliza la economía del país. En Brasil y Colombia, las remesas equivalen a las exportaciones de café.
Las remesas de los migrantes de Honduras y Nicaragua, de República Dominicana y Haití, significan la principal fuente de divisas de estos países.
Son 25 millones de migrantes latinoamericanos que solo en este año han enviado 70 mil millones de dólares a sus países.
No son las inversiones extranjeras las que sostienen la economía de América Latina.
No son las donaciones de la AID, ni los préstamos del BID, ni la cooperación internacional la que mantiene en pie a nuestros países.
Son los cheques de $50, de $100 enviados cada mes desde España, Estados Unidos o Italia, desde todos los lugares a donde nuestros compatriotas han tenido que emigrar porque no tenían trabajo en la tierra donde nacieron.
Ve a nuestro país, se ha convertido en limosnero de sus hijos y de sus hijas.
La esperanza es mejorar, el sufrir es por partir.
Hoy, 18 de diciembre, agradecemos a los hombres y mujeres migrantes por su esfuerzo y valentía. Sin ustedes, la economía de América Latina se habría venido abajo hace mucho tiempo.
Pero yo lo que quiero es volver, volver, como dice la ranchera. Reunirme con mi gente, comer mi comida, hablar mi propia lengua.
Sí, llegará el día en que puedan regresar. Cuando los gobiernos dignos se unan y rompan las cadenas de la injusta deuda externa y cumplan la deuda social que tienen con ustedes, migrantes de América Latina.
Se nos cierran los caminos, ya no hay ningún empleo, y ahí no más ni en nuestra casa nuestros hijos tienen miedo.
Tu Cristo es judío, tu escritura es latina, tus números son árabes, tu democracia es griega, tu equipo de música es japonés, tu televisor es chino, tu camisa es de Tailandia, tu reloj es suizo, tus estrellas futbolísticas son de Brasil, tu café mañanero es de Colombia, el chip de tu celular es africano, y tú eres el que mira a ese trabajador inmigrante como un despreciable extranjero.
Del otro lado estoy yo, como estás tú de este lado, yo no sé siquiera tú.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez y del resto de nuestro equipo de producción, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned and stay with me. We're going to be covering the homeless death memorial and the mayor's coronation speech. Don't go away.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see them on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside, safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
And that was Mark Levy from an ancient cassette called Take Off Your Clothes. Title song is Take Off Your Clothes to Those You Oppose, a new strategy for overcoming aggression. Face them naked. This song, of course, is called The Homeless Shuffle, and it's an interesting song. It's not quite the policy that the Santa Cruz the Santa Cruz progressives use, or the Santa Cruz, I don't know what you call them, the people who are in power at city council in dealing with homelessness and articulating their policy. The actual approach that's used is somewhat different, but it was we're going to be hearing, or at least I'm going to be referring to some of that tonight when I listen to or we talk about, I really am going to have a hard time listening to, Mayor Don Lane's coronation speech, his acceptance speech for the mayorship, which rotates every year in Santa Cruz between members of the Santa Cruz City Council. In Santa Cruz, they are actually, they don't want people in a campground, and they don't want them at the edge of town. They don't mind having a sort of small, creamed group of homeless people that get services, that get shelter. There's 100 people that can get access to the armory in winter. There's, I think, 46 people can get access to the Pauley Loft Shelter if they get on a waiting list and wait 2 to 6 weeks. And then there are some transitional programs. But, of course, in terms of providing emergency shelter for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits, forget about the whole county where there are thousands of homeless people, there's no interest or effort other than lip service being given. Lots of lip service. You're going to hear, or you're going to hear me refer to Don Lane's speech on this. He's the master of lip service in the entire homeless lack of service industry, as I like to term the Homeless Service Center. Actually, is the Homeless Lack of Services Center, because they miss and don't address the major component that people are really concerned with above and beyond everything else, which is the right to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. They don't provide either a place to sleep or advocacy for people providing and trying to subsist in their own places to sleep. Because in Santa Cruz, as those of you who are even sometime listeners know from my endless speeches on this, it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night on any public and most private property if you're outside, and even if you're in a vehicle, and even if it's legally parked on public property, that's a no-no as well. All again as a bow to the same attitude that is referred to in this song, the Homeless Shuffle, the NIMBY attitude, the not-in-my-backyard attitude. It goes on, and you can see it in this sort of in the extremity. It's kind of taking over, creeping through the whole town as more and more public space is declared out of off-limits, whether it's the parks or the levee or City Hall at night or the county building at night. Or even parking spaces up and down Laurel Street, up and down many of the streets of our town have prohibitions on parking after midnight, even though that essentially leaves all those places empty. It's not that it's a permit parking that's reserved simply for those who live there who get permits, which it is. That's that technical aspect. But that's not used by those people. What they really want to do is make sure no other needy person in a vehicle uses it, even to park their vehicle. It's really the kind of it's a despicable kind of aversion to poor people, which is growing. And it's ironic. It's growing at the same time that many of us are facing increased poverty because of unemployment, because of the bankster bailouts, because of the foreign wars, because of the fact that the economy is imploding on itself, in spite of all the feel-good commentary by downtown associations or Sentinels or Mayor Don Lane or former Mayor Ryan Coonerty, you name it. So, I had hoped to have on the air Mike Rhodes from Fresno, who regularly writes for Central Valley Indie Media, and you can go there by looking at onindiebay.org/Central Valley. He's a tireless writer and, more important, a man who goes out and organizes among both activists and homeless folks to try to establish some kind of resistance to this, what I call the right-wing riptide. That is not about the Republicans, but it's actually mostly about the Democrats. It's also about the Republicans. It's not just about the Republicans. It's about every sector of the establishment. It's something you actually saw identified, and this is one of the great things about the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy movement throughout the country, and the Occupy Santa Cruz movement that is meeting tonight. For those of you who are in possession of warm coats, go down to the courthouse where there is a group of people meeting every night at 6 o'clock. Trying to essentially restore the balance to plan actions that make people aware of their mutual needs and their mutual strengths and their mutual, I have to say the word, enemies in this society who are stealing away the public commons, stealing away the public trough, stealing away the public liberties. They're just doing it. Ranging from President Obama's scheduled signing of the military appropriations bill, the OMF, authorization for use of military force, is going to codify the right to indefinitely detain any American or citizen or anybody by the authorities anywhere, declaring the entire world a battlefield against an indefinite war against unspecified opponents, the terrorists, which sounds almost amazingly like something right out of the George Orwell novel 1984. And it's been talked about so much that it's a cliche, and so it's not something that one can really feel one saying anything new about. But what's needed, of course, are new strategies. And Occupy movement across the country was a new strategy, and is still a strategy that's being used, although Occupy Berkeley, I understand, was smashed last night. I still haven't really gotten up to date on that. I'm going to try to see what's cooking around that, and I'm going to be discussing that and playing a little bit if there's any kind of audio that brings that one home. But here's something, as I mentioned Mike Rhodes of Central Valley. He's written an article called Faith Groups Speak Out About the Homeless Issue. And he writes, about over 100 people attended a press conference today in front of Fresno City Hall to call on the city to stop the police and city sanitation department's ongoing attacks against the homeless. Spokesperson Bill Simon, chairperson of the Bishop Steinbeck Homeless Advocacy Committee, said the city has destroyed homeless people's shelter and is now taking and destroying their blankets, winter coats, and even taking firewood that they use to keep themselves warm at night. I'm going to play that speech. But before I do, and actually I had planned to play Don Lane's speech, which is something I decided which is kind of obscene to be playing on this station at this time, because Lane likes to talk about how important it is to have homeless services, like the Homeless Action Partnership, which is an expansion of the endless talk shop that seeks federal grants for money that don't really eventually get to homeless people mostly, but go into creating the illusion that there's a 10-year plan to end homelessness. When in fact, if a fraction of the amount of money that was being put into the homeless talk fest went to actually provide emergency campgrounds and shelter and parking lots for people to provide for themselves, over at night at least, there would be actually some move towards emergency shelter, not towards addressing basic economic problems, for sure, no. But at least assuring people the right of a relatively safe place to sleep. And of course, since the city and the county won't do this, not unlike other cities and counties, I acknowledge, still, we're talking about Santa Cruz, where we live. Homeless people and activists had to do it themselves, and did for the last 2.5 months, provided a campground, Occupy Santa Cruz. They occupied a part of the park that wasn't being used. They used it as a campground that was a pretty safe place for people to be comparatively. You know, there were problems that arose. There was some violence that arose at different points. You know, yeah, there were some people using drugs there. Can you imagine? You know, yeah, there were problems with pissing and shitting because the city wouldn't open its bathrooms. Finally, they agreed to allow Occupy Santa Cruz itself to pay for 3 porta potties, which they put in, which they then locked. The city then locked when it went through with no protest from Mayor Don Lane, who was vice mayor at the time, but not a word against it, not a word criticizing it, not a word talking about how absurd it was to destroy a homeless campground when they had no meaningful alternative shelter whatsoever, how cruel and abusive it was to do this, and how hypocritical to do this and then talk about the needs of the homeless and then show up piously at the homeless memorial service, which happened 2 days ago, Tuesday morning, as Police Chief Kevin Vogel did in his military attire, his police uniform. I say military because that's how these people proceeded through the campground. They destroyed, his police department destroyed dozens of tents. They compacted it in garbage trucks. They arrested people who were trying to help homeless people remove their gear and put it off to the side and charged them with $25,000 to $50,000 bail with the charge of obstructing an officer. And then when they went to court, oh, lo and behold, the charges disappeared. Because it was all, of course, part of the repression, the determination to return things to yesterday, the status quo ante approach. So let's go back to the good old days when we could shove the homeless out of sight. And those people who dared to set up tents in front of the county building or in the park would have them destroyed and would be arrested or ticketed. And that is what they have been doing for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And those who protest were followed all around town by police when there was this reoccupy movement that began on Saturday and moved around town mostly as a form of guerrilla theater. And you can read about that on Santa Cruz Indie Media at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. But let's hear what's going on in Fresno. Fresno is a city where the homeless, through attorneys, won $2.3 million and got the city got a ruling from a federal judge that if they destroy homeless property, they're liable. And so for a time, and to some extent, they've stopped destroying and started storing homeless survival property, gear and so forth, that they were previously destroying. And they did this because of work by this very this author who posted this story, Faith Groups Speak Out About the Homeless Issue, on the Central Valley website, Mike Rhodes. Anyway, I'm going to play some of this. And if you want, you can call into the show. You are listening, in case you wondered, because I haven't really mentioned where you are. You're at 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and the name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. Again, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. You've heard of Robespierre of the French Revolution. You've heard of those folks who, when you get up at night, you know, to go to shuffle to the indoor bathroom that, for example, homeless folks don't have. They will get arrested if they do what you're doing in your bathroom, although they have no other options. That's a bathrobe you wear, hence Bathrobes, Pierre is kind of the jokey name I've adopted when I wear a bathrobe at protest demonstrations, as I did on the evening of December 7th and the morning of December 8th when police came to destroy the campground. I actually wasn't there. I left shortly before it happened with not knowing. We didn't know when it was going to happen, so I wasn't there when it happened. But I've written about it, and had I been there, they probably would have taken me too. But we'll see what happens. Anyway, here's a Central Valley discussion from Fresno.
There are several thousand unsheltered homeless people living in the city of Fresno. And these poorest and most vulnerable members of our community are faced with a crisis caused by the illegal actions of the city of Fresno. As members of the faith community, we come from many houses of worship. Some of us are counted among those who place their faith primarily in the solidarity of all people. We all believe that we must love our neighbor as ourselves. We are here to say that the way the city of Fresno is treating our homeless brothers and sisters today is illegal, immoral, contrary to all religious principles, and just plain mean.
Thank you. And forgive the squeal in the background. This is an interesting contrast to what you're going to hear later in the show, Don Lane, our mayor, talking about. It's also, if you view this online, you'll see that this is a man speaking in the daytime with, looks like, dozens of people with protest signs behind him. I can't quite read the signs, but there are a number of them. And he is at City Hall confronting authorities and talking about what they have done, just as what, essentially, they did what Santa Cruz did. They destroyed homeless encampments in Fresno that had been there for several years under freeways without providing any alternate space for the great majority of people whom they made even more wretched through their destruction of the little shelter that they had without any justification whatsoever other than that it was illegal or that sometime in the future there'd be construction there and so forth. And you can read about that on the Central Valley Indy Bay website. The contrast with the Santa Cruz mayor's statements are that you'll hear the mayor lauding his staff and lauding the police and praising the wonderful things that are being done and completely ignoring the destruction of homeless property and the lack of shelter space. It is the reality in Santa Cruz. It's just so incredibly hypocritical. Perhaps in Fresno it's because you have an openly reactionary government. In Santa Cruz you have this hypocritical pseudo-progressive government that likes to pretend that it's liberal in some way, which of course it's not.
Thank you.
And we are angry with our city officials.
Amen.
The problem began when the city of Fresno closed all the homeless encampments. This happened between October 27th and November 8th of this year, just as the weather turned cold and rainy. The city finished the job on December 8th with the destruction of the encampment at Broadway and San Benito. However, the city graciously decided to save street pastor Ray Polk's street church until March. Dozens of people came to watch and photograph the city's and Caltrans' destruction of homeless people's property in flagrant disregard of the federal court order issued in July of 2008. That court order required the city to store any property for 90 days and said, if in doubt, store it. I myself spent more than 30 hours documenting this illegal activity.
And in fact,
I look forward to being on the witness.
In fact, that's not just a federal court order for Fresno. It is state law that you must store property for, I think it's 60 to 90 days, one of the two, if it is considered to be abandoned or it's discovered by the police. And, of course, that has been officially, the opposite policy has been used by the city Parks and Rec under the stewardship or tyrantship of the previous Parks and Rec manager. And under Dennett Shoemaker, that's been the case that homeless property is, and they acknowledge it, destroyed. Now, when I talked to Chief Vogel on December 8th, the day that his police went through despoiling the property there, destroying homeless possessions and goods and survival gear, he told our group that went to Parks and Rec to complain about this, to ask Dennett Shoemaker, the head of Parks and Rec, what this was all about, where what people could do now that she had destroyed the campground under the claim of an imminent emergency, but not specifying what that emergency was. Vogel claims that there is some property being kept at the police department, or that the property was taken to the police department. But witnesses say, who were videoing this at the time, that there was truck after truck that compacted, that hauled away the property, and there was a truck that compacted it as garbage. And it was hard to reconcile these two accounts. So I contacted the police department today to ask, you know, just how much property was there available to look at. And according to Marilyn there, a woman who identified herself as Marilyn by phone, there was a certain amount of property that they did have at the police department. Not anywhere near the number of tents that they tore down or the property that was taken away, but three pages worth of property. And she said people could come and get it in a couple weeks when the police department reopens after the holidays. So people can, if they're cold, they can just sort of keep walking around for 2 or 3 weeks. I should say a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then come back, but only between the hours of 12:30 and 1:30 and 3 and 3:15 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those are the only time that you're allowed to reclaim property that police thieves, that which they chose not to destroy, but actually simply stole and stored for some, I don't know, arbitrary reason. That's what's happening in Santa Cruz. Let's hear more about what's happening in Fresno.
Stand. When the city's callous disregard for the law comes to court.
Thank you. Yeah.
On November 3rd, several members of the community went to the city council meeting to protest this demolition derby. Council member Oliver Baines called us out for protesting the city's illegal activity instead of talking to the county, which is in charge of social services. On December 15th, there was an item on the city council's consent calendar to outlaw camping on city property with no discussion of the item. The penalty for camping on city property would be a misdemeanor punished by 6 months in jail or a fine ranging from $250 to $1,000.
And, of course, this mirrors what is happening in Santa Cruz. First of all, the city likes to shift responsibility to the county and talk about, oh, it's the county, the sheriffs that are doing it, and the sheriffs will shift responsibility back to the police. So, for instance, in front of the county building tonight, if you want to go to the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly, and you try to park your car in a parking spot and put some money in the meter to pay for that parking spot on the court side of the Water Street area, Water Street, you will find at least this is what I was told from people who've been down there in the last couple days, a no parking until, I think, January 1st sign. No reason for it, just no parking there. The reason it transpires, according to Lieutenant Wilson, who is a sheriff in charge of this, Craig Wilson, is that on 2 weeks ago, when the police were destroying the tents in front of the county building and the Accudome that was there, actually more like 3 weeks ago, people took the property and, in order to secure it from the sheriff's deputies' raid, they put it on top of their vehicles that were there. And he said this was hazardous, you see. And so because of this one raid, he decided, this is his pretext, as I understand it, from the Tuesday meeting he had with Occupy Santa Cruz souls, some of them credulous souls, who somehow believe this kind of conversation with the sheriffs is productive. I guess it provides some information of a kind. At least their claims are there, but they refuse to allow it to be tape recorded, I understand. I would never have permitted that kind of a meeting that can't be tape recorded, because it allows, you can't hold these people accountable in as credible a way as you should be able to. But anyway, Lieutenant Craig Wilson, there are these signs up now in front of the county building, not just no trespassing from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. throughout the night. You can't stand and hold up a sign in front of your Board of Supervisors building, your court building at night. That's now become illegal. No pretext for it, no reason for it, just that's it. And it's not even done by a legislative action. It's being done by an executive order from the head of the county administrative office, Susan Mariello, a woman who's paid a salary in the 200,000s, added to add her pension and so forth. I understand she makes over 500,000 a year. You got to say this is one of the 1%, folks. And it's being followed. The point I was making, though, is that just like in Fresno, where the city authorities deflect attention to the county, similarly here in Santa Cruz, the same thing is done. Don Lane, his Parks and Rec Department, I should say his Parking Authority Department, is responsible for these no parking signs, which are clearly an attack on the right to assemble there. I mean, you're making it more difficult for people to park near an event without any reason, near a public assembly that's being organized to protest grievances against that government. And when Lane was confronted with this and asked to address it and move to have it changed, he refused essentially to do that, suggesting that, well, it was done because the county requested us to do it. And the person who requested it was Lieutenant Craig Wilson. It finally transpired. The same lieutenant who came up to me 2 days ago and accused me of misrepresenting him and slandering him by calling him disingenuous. And we had a long discussion, some of which I'm going to be playing later in the show. And I'm afraid I have to repeat this to Lieutenant Wilson, much as I would. You know, it's too bad to have to call somebody disingenuous, but it's really important to do that if the label fits, you know, if the shoe fits, if the label sticks, if that's an accurate characterization. And I go through this long interjection here in the middle of the Fresno speech because, well, the Fresno speech is passionate and eloquent. We're going to hear more of it. The real relevance is what's going on here in Santa Cruz and how we are faced with exactly the same attack on poor people. And essentially, it's a kind of form of punishment for poor people suddenly establishing their own encampment, for suddenly establishing a rational, self-governing community that is not only self-sustaining and costs nothing, really, compared to the costly, over-controlled, utterly inadequate shelter services provided by the Homeless Lack of Services Center out at Coral Street. But it also is a protest movement against the abuses of the city and county governments and against the corporations and banks in town, which have, you know, resulting in foreclosures and more homelessness, and so which kind of threaten the status quo. So it's you're getting a double-barreled shotgun here against poor people because of what they're doing. It embarrasses authorities, and it also, at some level, threatens them. And because other communities other authorities. I don't think communities have done this. I don't think the community is trying to close down these protests. I think it is the authorities that are doing this throughout the country. But because other authorities are doing it, this empowers the NIMBYs, the tyrants, and it's tyrannical because it's not being done through a legal process. There is a legal process for closing down the campground at the San Lorenzo Park, and that would be waiting until January 3rd to go to court. It's in federal court and addressing those arguments. Instead, the whole thing was preempted by Dennett Shoemaker's so-called evacuation order of December 8th. At the county building, if you want to declare a curfew around the county, take it to the Board of Supervisors, have a public discussion about the so-called problems, particularly when you're claiming that you want to have a weekly meeting, as Lieutenant Craig Wilson and Susan Mariello's assistant said they did, to work out difficulties that come up. Instead of working them out, you send in police to destroy property and threaten people and arrest them and charge them with the same thing that you hear Fresno people being charged with. Penalties of up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. There have been at least four trespass arrests for people who are, or tickets for people who are simply standing on the courthouse steps or sitting on the courthouse steps between the hours of 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. as a clear political protest with a sign next to them or holding a sign about issues. And you can't get any really clearer than that when you shred the First Amendment. You really can't. It's happening in your town, folks. It's happening in your community.
Camping could include such terrible activity as sitting on a bench and covering up with a sleeping bag.
Sitting on a bench is not illegal in Santa Cruz. Covering up with a sleeping bag after 11 o'clock at night is. Sitting on a bench for more than an hour in Santa Cruz is illegal.
Many homeless advocates contacted their city council members, and the item was pulled from the consent calendar so that the council members could discuss it.
In Santa Cruz, we have a policy, unlike most other cities in California, that does not allow members of the public to pull items from the consent calendar, which means to require that they be discussed as individual items and not be rushed through without any meaningful discussion or staff report. Thanks to Ryan Coonerty, our former mayor. Thanks to our current mayor, Don Lane, who's made no changes at all in this policy in spite of comments that we could, what you have allowed for greater public discussion when he was running for city council in 2008. We have a very repressive practice at city council, just it kind of mirrors the repressive activities of police on the streets and this incredibly huge 90 to 120 police officers with, I don't know, five or six or seven allied agencies coming down to terrorize and destroy terrorize homeless people and destroy their property in the San Lorenzo campground. Disgraceful. And terrifying, really.
About 30 members of the community came to speak against the proposed ordinance, which was apparently put on the agenda by the city manager.
Thank you.
The city council members clearly did not know what the item was about. By the end of the discussion, the council decided that the proposed ordinance was aimed at Occupy Fresno and was meant to, perhaps unnecessarily, limit protesters' right to free speech.
Thank you.
Ironic that right-wing Fresno council members have more respect for the civil liberties of their people, Occupy Fresno, than great liberals and progressives in Santa Cruz do for the Occupy Santa Cruz protest. Because the attacks by sheriffs and the attacks by police on the campground and by sheriffs on the Occupy Santa Cruz protesters in front of the Water Street side of the courthouse have elicited no protests from Mayor Don Lane, in spite of his pious comments about the homeless, which you're going to hear later. Try not to eat before you listen to this particular tape that's coming up, assuming I play it, which I'm still not sure I'm going to do. I kind of hoped I can get another activist in here to really examine it in detail. Maybe I'll be able to do that. But you apparently at least have a city council which will not, it apparently, if we're listening correctly, didn't pass a camping ban. That Santa Cruz has had an effect for 33 years now, since 1978. And again, aimed at homeless and poor people. Aimed at those the city police department and the people in the wealthier neighborhoods consider undesirable. Aimed at those that the merchants want to drive out of the downtown area. And essentially aimed at making unlivable the lives of hundreds of homeless people who are in our community, many of them created by the economy or other problems that have through no fault of their own. And you'll hear, if you hear Don Lane's speech or want to read it, and that's one way to do is to go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel. It's been printed there and published in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. You just go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and I'll be reading portions of it from that, I think. You know, he talks about all the things that create homelessness and all the need to have some understanding of homeless people. And yet, of course, he has nothing to say when the police are destroying the only homeless shelter that is available for homeless in the winter for several hundred people. And he is, when he is asked these questions by Occupy Santa Cruz people in an interview that I taped, will he end the curfew on the city hall at night so people, at least if they want to protest, can, whether they're homeless or not, can go back to city hall and again read the agenda at night if they want to go read where the posted agenda is posted outside city council chambers, and they won't be under threat of arrest if they walk onto the grounds after 10 o'clock at night because of signs put up without any legislative action, without any city council action. At least in Fresno, it goes to the city council before they do these kinds of things. Not in Santa Cruz. It just goes to Danette Shoemaker, who rules vast areas of Santa Cruz. She can declare them forbidden zones, no-go zones at night, just by posting signs by her own edict, and has done so. The levee, the parks, where the drum circle was meeting at Soquel Avenue across from CVS, San Lorenzo Park area, City Hall, the police station at night, you name it. There are many areas where this has been done, and it's something which you would think, because we're talking about public space and we're talking about innocent behavior, and we're talking about even more than that, the right to privileged behavior, the right to a peaceful protest, couldn't be done without some really serious threat. But no, it just requires a signature on a piece of paper from Danette Shoemaker, which she seems to be more than happy to provide.
But as written...
Again, we're listening to Bill Simon in Fresno. Bill is a member of the spokesperson for the John Steinbeck Homeless Advocacy Committee. And in Fresno, the city has destroyed homeless people's shelter and is now taking and destroying their blankets, winter coats, and even taking firewood that they use to keep themselves warm at night. And that is the subject of a protest you can see on Central Valley Indy Bay and hear the speech, which I'm now going to keep interrupting probably, but we'll play a little bit more of.
The ordinance would also punish the homeless. The city of Fresno and area social service agencies do get millions of federal dollars each year to help and house the homeless. One person at the city council meeting said that the city does not take advantage of millions of dollars available to house the homeless. She meant that there is more money available. Based on that perhaps unclear statement, council members Borges, Westerland, and Baines bawled us out for not being factual, for complaining about the city's appalling behavior instead of talking to the county, for playing politics, and for thinking this was an anti-homeless ordinance rather than being merely an anti-constitutionally guaranteed free speech ordinance.
Yeah!
The anti-camping ordinance failed to pass but by a 6-1 council vote, it will be brought back to the council probably on January 5th, after the city can talk to the county about passing the same anti-camping ordinance. While many of us were at the city council meeting, the city of Fresno was sending police officers and sanitation workers to F Street and to Santa Clara Street. They made the homeless remove their belongings from shopping carts and loaded the carts onto a truck. After taking the carts, the city trashed whatever property the homeless couldn't carry away, including coats, sleeping bags, blankets, and even two urns containing the ashes of family members. Those who were in Pavarello House eating lunch, or performing their service chores, or using other Pavarello or Holy Cross services, lost everything. Their personal property was sent to landfill in violation of the Fourth Amendment. As a result, many homeless faced the likelihood of illness and even the possibility of death because they don't even have a coat to wear in this bitter cold weather.
And remember, in Santa Cruz, though they aren't confiscating coats and blankets, they were confiscating tents and other survival gear and destroying it. And that is something you have to think about whether you approve of, because that's what's being done. Your police department is doing that. Your city council is tolerating that. Your city manager is ordering that.
The police department is now coming at 3 o'clock in the morning with fire extinguishers to douse homeless people's warming fires and confiscate their firewood. And many don't even have a warm coat because the city has sent their coat to landfill. Agencies working in the city and county of Fresno have found housing for about 1,500 homeless people in recent years. But many thousands of homeless cannot be housed even in the distant future. We must develop a compassionate interim solution. The most frequent question I receive is, where are they supposed to go? I don't have an answer. The city's answer seems to be, who cares, as long as it's out of sight. City officials have repeatedly said they would like the faith community to become involved in the homeless situation in Fresno. Many houses of worship, as well as other members of the community, have been deeply involved in serving our homeless brothers and sisters. Today, we officially say to the city and to the county that the faith community and the larger community are involved in serving our homeless brothers and sisters. And we are strongly opposed to what the city is doing. Specifically, we call on the city of Fresno to immediately stop illegally destroying homeless people's property. Including coats, sleeping bags, deceased relatives' ashes, and other property. Stop trashing the coats, sleeping bags, and blankets which the generous people of Fresno have donated to keep the homeless warm. We call on the city and the county of Fresno not to pass an anti-camping ordinance which would unnecessarily limit residents' right to free speech and cause additional hardship to the homeless. We call on the city and the county to cooperate with those members of the community who are seeking interim housing solutions for those who must wait for permanent housing. Every homeless person needs and deserves some kind of a shelter, even if tonight it can only be a tent or a sleeping bag. We call on the city of Fresno to stop waking people in the middle of the night, extinguishing their warming fires, and taking their firewood.
Now! Now!
No one should have to live in a tent. But it's better than living without a tent or without even a sleeping bag or a blanket. The city is making the difficult life of the homeless even worse. And in today's political and economic situation, most of us are just a layoff away from joining our homeless brothers and sisters.
Man. Yes, yes. Right.
If you or your house of worship would like to become involved in a coordinated effort to serve our homeless brothers and sisters, please email homelessfr@sbcglobal.net. That's homelessfr, as in Fresno, at sbcglobal.net. I was on F Street Monday night, a little more than a half mile away from Pavarello House, for a meeting about Occupy Fresno and about this press conference. At least five people greeted me on the street because they knew me from the closing of the encampments when their housing was destroyed. I still find myself crying occasionally at that senseless destruction.
Man. Yeah.
These people have become my friends, and today I don't know where to find many of them. We all must care for the rights and well-being of all our brothers and sisters. Thank you.
That was Bill Simon. Again, you can go to indybay.org/Central Valley, indybay.org/Central Valley to hear that speech. Here's Mike Rhodes, who is an activist who, as I mentioned before, has really been working on this issue for, 5 to 10 years, and out there with camera and video camera and computer. Here he is at a press conference with questions and answers. This is on December 21st at Fresno City Hall.
Any questions?
How many faith-based groups are here today, and who are they?
And this is actually Bill Simon. I think Rhodes has just posted it. Sorry, I don't mean to give. That's the speaker, Bill Simon.
Well,
Mennonites,
St. Church,
St. Mark United Methodist.
Unitarian Universalist.
Faith in
community.
Mormons.
Believers, Christians, and
Church. Buddhists.
How come the faith-based groups haven't taken in the homeless?
This is a society problem. This is a problem of our
community. If you want to speak, we need to...
And actually, there's some good questions being raised here, but my first note is that you don't see the churches here in Santa Cruz coming to protest against how the city is destroying homeless survival gear and arresting people for trying to assist homeless and breaking up a homeless meal that was happening every night out at Occupy Santa Cruz and destroying the First Amendment as they go, of course, because they were involved in protests against the city and county and around the banks for what the mess they've created. So you don't have these, you don't have religious groups out there in any kind of official capacity in Santa Cruz, haven't for years. There was a time in the past, about a decade ago, when churches did show up at some of the protests, or representatives of some churches, and the Quakers were instrumental a couple decades ago in fighting the sleeping ban, but it just doesn't happen in Santa Cruz. It is true that in Santa Cruz you have a law that was passed in the mid-90s that allows church parking lots to be used with the permission of the church for three vehicles to sleep, people to sleep in three vehicles each night if the church wants. It's used by a handful of the scores of churches in Santa Cruz. So it's just that the churches are go to church on Sunday, kick the poor on Monday, ignore them as the police drive them out on Tuesday kind of mentality. It also is true, full disclosure, that a handful of churches provided the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which provided shelter for, I think at the max, one point, a maximum of 80 people each night. No longer even exists, I don't think. And there has been talk. You may have heard Steve Plaich here on our show, an activist who created his own homeless legal assistance project. He works with Needle Exchange, he says, and with suicide prevention. And he regularly provides legal assistance, though he's not a lawyer himself. He's got some legal training. He is working with an interfaith group to supposedly expand, and you're going to hear Don Lane, the mayor. I refer to him in this sarcastic way because one time we had some hope in him. That was in 1988 when he was running for city council and making some statements about what he'd do to end the sleeping ban or the camping and or the camping ban, but he went lame, so he's gone lame. He's not just Don Lane, he's gone lame, and that's what I've always called him since then, because that's his kind of the reality of who he is, and compared with the illusion he would like to create and the talk he puts out. But and again, we're listening to the Fresno press conference at front of City Hall yesterday. That was posted online, and good for them for passing this on.
Why have they not taken in the homeless? There are some houses of worship who have extensive programs to help the homeless, whether it's food pantries or clothing, or some of them, I understand, even let them sleep on their property. There is a possibility we'll be able to develop a program like they have in other cities where different churches host the homeless for a week or two at a time and then move elsewhere. The problem is that takes care of 20 or 30 homeless people, and we have 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 homeless people on the streets of Fresno. The churches have very much adopted Pavarello House and the Rescue Mission and other organizations that work with the homeless, and so in a lot of ways, they are serving them.
Is the ACLU or any other group planning to take legal action if, in fact, the city is violating the federal restraining order against destroying people's property?
And this would be a good question for our own ACLU, if there really were an ACLU other than a front group for Mike Rotkin and Ryan Coonerty to continue doing what they've always done. These are Rotkin is a former mayor. Coonerty was the mayor this last year. I think his wife heads the Downtown Association. She's the Dale Williams jewelry heiress. The ACLU is really non-existent, and in terms of its presence on any local issues. Although, ironically, I believe Santa Cruz County, I was told, has the largest number of dues-paying members of any ACLU in the state. It's kind of hard to believe. I would imagine L.A. would have a larger number. Who knows? I'm not sure how they've organized it. But attempts to get the ACLU Board of Directors to address any issues, ranging from the do-it-yourself last night police infiltration, which was a scandal about 5 or 6 years ago, and then under Mayor Rotkin and Mayor Coonerty, there were police singling out and harassment of leaders in this event, which is coming up again, by the way. There is a DIY parade, do-it-yourself parade scheduled for New Year's Eve. It's going to be happening as it usually does every year. Last year, to the credit, or should we say, yes, to the credit of the community, which raised its voice loud against police harassment, police didn't issue any tickets, as they had the year before when they singled out Wes Modes, Whitney Wild, and Curtis Relaford for a citation. So, well, let's hear some more of the press conference. I also want to note that I did get a call from activist Becky Johnson, who is standing by the radio and apparently will be able to comment on some of Don Lane's coronation comments, which he makes at great length about his wonderful sympathy with the homeless, even as he watches his police department deny them the right to form self-protective encampments in the winter, even as he supports the ongoing sleeping and camping bans, even while he supports curfews at City Hall. It's going to be interesting to listen to that. Here's, again, Bill Simon answering questions at the Fresno press conference yesterday, where there were church leaders willing to speak out, activists confronting City Hall and raising issues, as Occupy Santa Cruz raised issues a couple of months ago. They walked to City Hall. They marched to City Hall. They have been regularly filling the oral communications doghouse session, as I call Coonerty's special isolated oral communications session, which we're going to find out if Don Lane is going to continue these Coonerty practices. I'm going to be interviewing him. Lane has agreed to a radio interview, which Coonerty wouldn't do, although he shuffled around a lot on that. First he was going to, then he wouldn't, and then he claimed I didn't show up and that sort of thing. So we'll see if what's going on with that. Here's some more from Fresno and Bill Simon at this press conference.
There was a lawyer who came to Fresno. He was involved in the Kincaid versus the City of Fresno lawsuit that resulted in the court order. He was here, I think it was November 21st, and interviewed about 20 of the homeless who had lost their property. And it looks like there will be a court case. They're deciding whether it should be individual lawsuits or class action or economic lawsuits.
And here in Santa Cruz at the Reoccupy on Saturday, which was a sort of the day of events in front of the courthouse, but didn't result in a permanent reoccupation anywhere in town that I'm aware of, because the police and the authorities drove it away, and because it was not very well attended as well. I mean, there weren't that many people there, but some did show up, and there were some protests. But we at Huff tried to do a similar kind of gathering of information about people who had lost their property, so we could start beginning. We could ourselves invite lawyers from out of town, because local lawyers are not interested in this stuff. They are really too closely embedded in or involved with or intimidated by the current system down that involves driving away the homeless, destroying their property, and doing so while claiming to be helping the homeless, as you'll hear Don Lane talk about with such tenderness in a bit. It is true that there are more lawyers from the National Lawyers Guild that have gotten involved in offering to defend Occupy Santa Cruz people who have been ticketed or jailed on completely groundless charges. The three charges that are most notorious are the lodging charge, where holding a protest sign at night or sleeping in a protest tent in front of the county building at night is lodging. That was used extensively against Peace Camp 2010 a year before. Secondly, trespass, which is a new charge they've cooked up when they decided unilaterally, without any legislative action, as I said before, to, they being Susan Mariello and the sheriffs, to declare it's a no-go zone at night in the courthouse area and the county building area on the county property around it from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. Although, every night, Occupy Santa Cruz has its assembly that goes on into the night from 6 p.m., and they defy this curfew on the Constitution, as I believe they're probably doing tonight. I'm going to try to give them a call later in the program to see if they're there and what they're doing. So the ACLU it has helped in Fresno, for sure, but it's a different ACLU. It is not the Rotkin-run ACLU that we have here in Santa Cruz, the ACLU that studiously avoids, for the most part, any kind of statements on any issues of civil rights for poor people, even political issues, as I've talked about on this show, when their ACLU canvassers are driven away from the New Leaf, Trader Joe's grocery area and the parking lot in violation of the Pruneyard decision, which is a decision that says petitioners and flyer givers are allowed to be in parking lots, even privately owned parking lots that where there are a variety of businesses there because there's sort of a town square thing. They were cited and driven away by police acting on private complaint from the property managers there. And the ACLU did nothing to defend them. I think the charges may have been dropped when they reached court for some people, but there has been no challenge, and there aren't canvassers and petitioners there in back of Trader Joe's, at least not from the ACLU and not from other organizations that steer clear. We see this erosion of rights not only, you know, shockingly at the national level with this, you know, Obama can assassinate anybody he wants with a drone without any legal process, and Obama can jail anybody he wants through the military and hold them indefinitely. That's unfortunately going to be the law once he signs it. And even before he signs it, of course, it'll be the practice of the Bush and the Obama regimes for anybody that they designate as a terrorist without being taken to a court. But we have the same thing happening at a local level. And what's going to stop it is your resistance, folks. That's what stops this. That's what sets them back on their heels. And, of course, when people stop coming out in numbers, then the police show up, they do their thing, they drive people away. And we return to a state of fear because people isolated from each other do not have the mutual solidarity and support they need to resist this stuff. Some brave people do individually, and they continue to resist it and will continue to resist it, and hopefully they'll be joined by others. Back to Fresno.
They're trying to help 1,500,000 people. They're getting them houses. What are you asking from the city now?
The city has put all its eggs in one basket, housing first. But housing first can't work for everybody in 5 years or 10 years. So we're asking that the city allow or even help shape temporary housing solutions for everybody who lives on the street.
Housing First is not a bad program, which is says, you know, get housing for people, even those with drug and alcohol problems, even, you know, even if it's a wet housing, as they call it. They say that people can drink and they can use, they will be using. We don't make it a requirement that they not use drugs or alcohol because our first objective is to give them housing. And once in that situation, then you work on their other problems. It's not a bad idea. But in the meantime, you know, you have huge numbers of people who can't be given housing because the, you know, the banks are taking all the money and the wars are eating up all the money and the cities, you know, are using all the money for other reasons or just simply holding it aside. Fresno has held millions of dollars aside that was specifically authorized for the homeless. Mike Rhodes has talked about this on this show before and simply refused to use it because it doesn't want to. It doesn't have the same crass edge as police stealing blankets and firewood and dousing warmth fires for people in freezing weather at night, but it kind of amounts to the same thing. It is a way of saying, we don't care about these homeless people. We know we care about them. They are vermin. We want to eliminate them. We want to remove them. We don't, you know, they don't want to say that. That's not, you know, we don't want to, you know, use Hitlerian language in the 21st century. You just want to engage in the policies in a genteel way, in ways that don't look offensive, and we can continue to engage in our shopping behavior at Christmas time.
They allow them a space to live in peace.
The
encampments were a housing development in Fresno. That's not homeless to most people in Fresno. So I think that's where people are seeing something different with this. I'm just playing the devil advocate. And they see that as an encampment is not homeless. They live there. They go there after work. I mean, that's not homeless.
And, they should have rights.
Okay, so that right. Homeless is a lot of different things. And the encampments, one of the problems is the encampments become home. They become very comfortable. Someone had a two-story structure in one of the encampments. And when you have something that secure and you haven't had that stability in 10 years or more, you really hesitate to give it up. There were, the city estimates, 286, I think, homeless in the encampments. My guess was closer to 400 or 500. It varies from time to time. But that would mean that less than 10% of the homeless were living in the encampments. They are everywhere in the city, and we need to help all of them have a safe and decent place to sleep at night.
Yes.
It's abusive policies. To talk with George on the phone from Occupy Santa Cruz. Hey, George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. What's up?
Okay. I know that usually every night at 6, there's a general assembly of people in front of the county building on Water Street. In spite of the no parking signs that are arrayed on each parking meter and the curfew from 7 p.m. on that covers the entire county property. What's happening there tonight?
As far as I know, the General Assembly is going on. I'm not attending it tonight.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were there.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Whoa. Anything happened today that we should know about? I know you've been active in Occupy Santa Cruz for the last few months. Anything going on, anything coming up that the community should hear about?
Pretty much, you know, the students have gone home and the county building is shutting down. So Occupy is sort of, we're revamping our website and getting ready for January.
So I noticed there is still an Occupy Santa Cruz website, and there's also, of course, a Facebook page for Occupy Santa Cruz. And you've been posting some videos, getting up pretty early in the morning, I guess on Sunday morning, to follow around the police, the unhealthy interests of the police in curtailing First Amendment activity from people who are engaging in Occupy Santa Cruz protests, who were driven away from the county building, went down to the town clock, driven away from the town clock, then went to one of the other corners of that intersection. And you had some, what I guess they were called, tent monsters who were there?
Yeah, I lived nearby, and I was woken up in the early morning hours to noise outside. And I went downtown outside to where the clock tower was about 5 a.m. and I saw a couple protesters there and a policeman, and I started filming that. And the police officer was trying to explain the rules of a protest downtown, which seemed pretty complicated to me.
They're trying to move them on, right? They're trying to say, you can't be in this location. Got to be 10 feet from here and 10 feet from there. You can't have a tent size larger than 6 by 6 by 3. And I believe that it's, at one point, there were people who actually had, who were wearing tents. I guess by the time you got there, those folks had left.
The monsters had gone, and there was just one tent remaining, which Sergeant Flippo decided was too large, and he told the protesters that the tent was too large, and he gave the protester a three-page document describing all the rules for protest downtown.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've actually posted your video on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, under one of the latest stories. If you go to the upper right-hand corner of that website, you can find the story and your video posting, for which I want to thank you, by the way.
Yes, I posted that, so you can look at the article is about Occupy Santa Cruz and the protest downtown, and comments include the links to the two videos that I took at 4 a.m.
I think at one point, a couple hours before, according to the Hamburglar, as he calls himself, one of the protesters, they actually had 9 police officers for 8 protesters and 9 squad cars for 8 police. Because each police officer brought her his squad car. Maybe they just wanted to... Maybe they were showing their support for Occupy Santa Cruz. Kind of doubt it, though.
Yeah, so when I was there at 4 a.m., there were 3 police officers for 2 protesters that I have on film. There were some other people behind me. And I figure that at 4 a.m. they've caught their DUI and they've done their report, and then they're ready to go hassle some other people.
So are you, you know, it's really useful for people who are doing these nightly protests to have somebody downtown who's actually got a video camera and is willing to get up in the wee hours of the morning and document this stuff, because, I find instances of police harassment during the day all the time. I mean, it's often hard to find a place to park, to pull over and go and at least witness it and draw the attention of the community to what's going on, which is what I do. I tend to whip out a tape recorder and I start talking loudly about what the police are doing and suggesting that why are they parked in the middle of the street going after a homeless guy who's sitting within 10 feet of a building or 14 feet of a building, since it's illegal in Santa Cruz to sit within 14 feet of a building, thanks to the Merchants Downtown Ordinance sitting ban. But it's good to have somebody down there who at least on occasion is interested in going out and documenting that. And I want to thank you for that, George.
Yes, I at all times I carry a camera that has video capability, and I carry extra batteries. And I never know when that camera becomes handy. And I follow the Twitter feed for Occupy Santa Cruz, so when I hear something going happening said over the Twitter feed, I get up and go out and find out what they're up to. They have a habit of doing things unexpectedly, like you locking themselves to the railing at the county building or doing protests at 4 a.m. And the cops tend to be unpredictable too. They will raid the place at the early morning hours when no one else has a camera.
Right, and I think it's really important that somebody there have that, and I encourage other people to do that as well. Well, thanks for giving us the update. I wish I knew somebody there. You know, if you want to reach somebody at the Occupy Santa Cruz by phone who you think might be interested in calling into the show to giving us an update, I encourage you to do that. The number here is 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, in case you are interested in making contact. I'm too preoccupied with the switchboard and so forth to do it, and I have other fish to fry here. But if you find yourself, you think there's anybody there who might be interested in making a report and you feel like getting in touch with them and have some phone contacts, do it, you know.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, George.
Sure, bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Let's finish up the Fresno interview. This, is Bill Simon in Fresno yesterday talking to a group of reporters. He's got about 50 or 60, if not more, people behind him from the interfaith community denouncing Fresno authorities for a camping ordinance that is likely to be passed in early January, for police seizure of homeless property, destroying firewood, and so forth. But before we go to that, it looks like we have a caller, so let's see what's going on here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Robert, Uncle Dennis here.
Hey, Dennis.
The 427-4523 number no longer works.
Oh, no.
No, it was ditched because no one was using it, and, it was money we were spending that... didn't really work. So,
yeah.
If you want people to contact you, perhaps the Huff number. And as soon as we get out of our financial situation, or if somebody wants to donate a phone machine for the studio, then we'll go that way.
Sounds good, Dennis. You'll be coming in tonight for From the Cream to the Dregs?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I will.
That sounds good.
Bye.
Thanks. And actually, I haven't given out that number because I think
I think I've been aware of that, that we used to have a voicemail, which Dennis just mentioned has been discontinued. Dennis's show is coming up after mine, 8 to 11, From the Cream to the Dregs. Music for all you nostalgia buffs from the 60s and 70s. Good stuff, my kind of stuff often. But he also does an Earth First report, talks about environmental issues. That'll be happening starting at 8 o'clock tonight. Again, the number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Also, Free Radio will be tabling between 11:30 and 2:30 on Saturday, the day before Christmas. That's going to be, I believe, in front of O'Neill's, right across from the Cinema 9. If you want to help table or you want to donate some money or some equipment or some opinions to Free Radio Santa Cruz, there's one place to go. You can also go to the Free Radio Santa Cruz website, freakradio.org, all one word, freakradio.org, and find us there. And as Dennis said, if you want to leave a message for Free Radio, you can contact Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Since I do a regular show here on Free Radio, I will pass that on to the Free Radio Maestros, and that number is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Again, the number in the studio is 427-3772. Getting back to Bill Simon of Fresno, speaking out against the abuses by Fresno authorities, which really mirror in many ways the abuses of Santa Cruz authorities.
They're helping them eat and they're letting them sleep on their property. What are they doing specifically to help them to make sure that they get housing? We can't rely on the city to house 5,000 people. What are you guys doing to make sure that they have a roof over their head and they don't have to be sleeping on the street?
I think the faith community is just beginning to develop a more comprehensive response. It has, for the most part, over all these years, supported things like Pavarello House. But before Bishop Steinbach died, he asked Father Jim Rood to begin a task force to come up with a diocesan response to homelessness, and especially to educate all of our parishioners about the dignity of the homeless and ways that they can help.
You know, and I'm going to kind of leave it here. This is a press conference that you can find online on Santa Cruz, I should say Fresno, or actually it's Central Valley Indie Media, and that's at IndieBay, IndieBay.org/Central Valley, small letters, one word. And the name of the story is Faith Groups Speak Out About the Homeless Issue. I'm often skeptical of religious groups. I'm glad when they do protests. I'm glad when they raise issues and educate folks. I'm glad when they provide space for homeless folks. And they probably, in many ways, their heart is there much more than the government officials. But it's also, it has its limitations. It doesn't involve broad organizing and the kind of protesting and power sharing and power empowerment that is really, I think, going to result in institutional changes and changes on a broader level. But I'm always glad to see it happening. I know here in Santa Cruz we have Father Joel Miller at the Red Church every Monday, who provides a meal and a service and a speak out for him, or at least he did for homeless folks. Steve Plaich goes there every Monday from 5 to 7 and has a kind of a homeless legal assistance project. I'm not quite sure what kind of legal assistance he's providing. We can talk about that in more detail, perhaps, at some point. So there are people who are doing stuff. Rene Curry provides a meal downtown. Dennis Adams provides a meal at 4 o'clock out at the Homeless Services Center on Sunday. There are religious groups that provide acts of charity on a limited basis, and they're attacked. Cynthia Matthews, former mayor, attacked Father Joel Miller. I've documented that, and you can find that if you go to Father Joel Miller, Cynthia Matthews. You'll find the description of the kind of bigoted attack and rather disingenuous, there you go, attack by Cynthia Matthews using the cover of city council without any kind of real documentation to try to eliminate a homeless meal on a Monday night in the middle of town that Joel Miller still does. But it's one meal once a week, and it's nothing to really shout about, although, sometimes you hold on to threads when everything else seems to be unraveling around you. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to do what I threatened to do, which is play Mayor Don Lane's coronation speech. And also, I'm going to, I think before I do, I'm going to try to get in touch with, or ask Becky Johnson to call in. Becky, if you're listening, do give me a call, and we'll put you on the line at the same time as this speech is playing, so you can ask us to stop the speech at certain points to make comments on it. I know that I'll be stopping as well to make commentary. So I think if you don't call in, I'm going to try to call you, which I may do in a moment. Let's see if I'm... I think I will do that. Let's see if I can reach you. Give you a quick call here. And we'll see if we get through to you. And here we go.
Hello.
Hey there, Becky.
Speaking.
Hey, Becky. Now, I know, why don't you tell folks a little bit of your background so they can know exactly just, you know, what you know or and what kind of expertise you have around homeless issues and this, the kind of experience you've had and your, you know, your own, your past acquaintanceship with Mayor Don Lane.
Oh, well, let's see. I guess I've been a city council watcher at least since 1995, and I wrote for Street Spirit for 10 years and often covered issues that involved how the city council interacted with homeless policy.
What is Street Spirit? Hello?
I hear the radio there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to shut a door because I was hearing myself on the radio.
Yeah, it can be confusing. That's a good thing to do. Street Spirit is, I asked you, it was kind of an academic question. Street Spirit is a homeless newspaper sold by homeless people in the Bay Area every month, which used to have a lot of stories about Santa Cruz. It hasn't so much recently, but you were a regular writer, and in fact, your writings can be found online at the Huff website. Some of the articles, really extensive coverage of city council, which was not covered elsewhere, and some of my fine articles as well. Plus, you have a website, I believe, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking.
Yeah, and I have some past experience working on social service-type nonprofit organizations for homeless people as well. So just kind of seen it from a couple different sides. And I also attended the homeless deaths memorial on Tuesday as well.
Did you attend the Don Lane coronation speech? I guess it was the Tuesday before that when he got the mayorship.
Oh, no. No, I don't think I wanted to be in that room. There was way too much laudatory stuff going on for people who I don't feel that way.
Yeah, and of course there was the pastries and drinks afterward in the Civic Auditorium, I understand.
Well, that might have been fun to crash.
Yeah.
But not this year.
I mean, I know generally each year we try to, some of us will try to encourage homeless people to go and feast there. You know, it was particularly appropriate in a way because it would have been on the, I guess, on the 14th, just 6 days after the... Don Lane's police department, or Ryan Coonerty's police department, Don Lane was vice mayor at the time, destroyed the River Street campground.
The San Lorenzo encampment.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
So, how would you like to do this? I have the tape that you prepared for us, which you made off of, I guess...
I made a recording of the coronation, and so I have listened to it.
You want to make some introductory
for your listeners.
Do you want to make some introductory remarks, or do you want me to just begin to play it?
No, just go ahead and play it.
All right, I got to warn you, I'm liable to interrupt it because I'm often unable to contain myself, and you know, rather than shout bullshit in the middle of a council meeting, which I've done before, not bullshit or hogwash or it's a lie, I don't know. I would, you know, at least I have the power to do that on the radio.
Yes, you can disrupt the tape. It will.
Well, I can pause the tape, please.
You can pause it.
We can allow...
You can interject.
It's too bad somebody can't disrupt the tape, but, you know, that's... let's see what we have here. Let's give it a try. Mm.
every single city department, and we have a great citizenry that working together will move us in the right direction in all of these areas. But tonight I focus on the issue of homelessness, not simply because it's of personal interest to me, but because it's one of the most challenging, vexing, and divisive issues in our community. Homelessness is not just the concern of homeless activists. It's a concern of business people, neighborhood residents, conservationists, public safety officials, health workers, social service providers, compassionate young people, and members of many faith communities. Since almost every member of our community is in one or more of those groups, it's clearly an important issue for lots of people. And there's one other group that it concerns more than any of those groups that I just named, and that's the group consisting of the people who are experiencing homelessness right now in our community. It's impacting these people every hour of every day and every night. For the rest of us, homelessness can be an annoyance or a periodic impediment to business, or something unpleasant or disturbing we see from time to time, or a problem we have to deal with in our work. But the rest of us still have a place to go every night where we can shut the door, climb into a reasonably comfortable bed, go to the refrigerator for a snack, stay warm and dry. Now, I invite you to take a moment to consider who's homeless in our community. Some are young children still hanging in there with their parents. Some are teens who were driven out of abusive homes. Some are women forced to leave their homes because of an abusive partner. Some are veterans who never fully bounced back from the trauma of war. Some are folks with serious mental health issues who've fallen through some pretty big cracks in our mental health care system. And some are those scruffy-looking guys you see hanging out in various places around the community. I want to invite you to consider more carefully this scruffy-looking guy who many quickly label a worthless bum who's getting some free soup and perhaps drinking in a park and sleeping under a bridge. This is the guy some would say is homeless by choice. Perhaps a more accurate description would be, this is a guy who is homeless in part because he made some bad choices. I don't think he woke up one day in his apartment and said to himself, I think I'll go out and be homeless today. It's likely he made some poor choices related to substance abuse, and those contributed to his homelessness. It's equally likely that he lost a decent job he had in the downsizing industry, or had a serious illness that used up all his resources. Both, but what is most likely of all is that it was a combination of both poor choices and circumstances beyond his control.
I'm going to pause here, Becky. Any comments so far about this speech by Don Lane 2 weeks ago at City Council?
Well, on the surface of it, I don't have an objection. I tend to agree with him that we have to look at homeless people differently than we've been looking, and we have to humanize how we look at them. But it's also hard to hear because he's saying, well, we have a place where we can go to sleep where it's warm and dry, and he's trying to inspire that audience when we know that he and Ryan Coonerty and the police just on December 8th crushed a campground that housed up to 200 people who had a place to sleep where it was warm and dry until they spent a lot of city and county money. I mean, 90 police officers in riot gear to crush them. I think it was only like 7 people at the end who really refused to leave and were arrested.
Actually, I think it was only one person. The other people who were arrested for trying to assist people in removing their belongings, or they had a warrant for drug use or something like that.
He's addressing the myth that people are considered homeless by choice. And he does seem to give some credence to the myth that alcohol or drug abuse contributed to becoming homeless. It's actually kind of the other way around. People become homeless, and once they're already homeless, they get into alcohol and drugs because they're so miserable.
But, you know, I guess...
quibble about that. But what he doesn't mention is that a huge problem for people who become homeless and sometimes can't get out of homelessness is all the legal problems they face.
Well, you know, before we get into that, I just have to say it is... And this is really kind of a really clear example of kind of a cognitive dissonance, a disconnect between... Well, I mean, it's worse than that. It's a form of pious hypocrisy of the worst sort for Lane, who has the power, who could have had the power to speak out to oppose Chief Vogel's attack on the homeless encampment and its destruction of the homeless encampment without any meaningful additional shelter being provided at all, other than the 100 spaces in the Army where everybody can, you know, cough together in one great room if you don't mind getting there at 3:30 in the afternoon, and you don't have a job, you don't have a pet, you don't have a vehicle.
No, Don Lane said he supported the injunction.
Plus, you had, you know, Lane supporting not just the proposed injunction against the the campground, but he supported shortcutting the injunction with the evacuation order by Danette Shoemaker, which removed...
Well, he washed his hands of it.
It removed the entire campground prior to its being able to be examined in federal court, and he had no respect for that either, or he didn't speak out about it. So, and also more recently, and I suppose I'm probably not going to have time to play this tonight. Maybe I'll play it on Sunday when I have a show from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. When he was, you know, when a number of home Occupy Santa Cruz folks met with him more recently than the speech, I guess a week later, they met with him on Monday afternoon in front of the courthouse. He was asked if he had changed his opinion on any of these issues, whether he supported ending the curfew at the court, at the county, the city hall, so that the protesters, if they wanted to, or the public could go there at night, just, you know, to be present at their seat of government if they wanted to be. You know, I mean, they would still be illegal to sleep or camp. It would still be illegal, you know, to do life-sustaining behavior. But, you know, at least you could do First Amendment, traditionally First Amendment protected activity. No, didn't support that either. He wouldn't support any changes in that. He is essentially trying to show sympathy for homeless people because he is, of course, a bureaucrat who's not only the mayor, but he's been on his shtick for years has been the board of directors of the Homeless Service Center. Isn't that correct? Or lack
correct.
Of services.
And that cannot be ignored, that much of city policy that Don Lane supports involves funneling people into the Homeless Services Center, getting them on the waiting list. You recall that newspaper article that came out, must have been around November 15th or so, that said the Armory had opened, and it said that 50 people had used the Armory on the first night. Well, I talked to one of the women who slept in the Armory on the first night. She said there were only 20 people that showed up to use the Armory that night. The other 30 people had been contracted by the Homeless Services Center to do various jobs and everything. And she didn't count them. She said, I don't count staff. She said, I'm just counting the people who showed up. There were 20 people. Meaning that many of those people were in Occupy Santa Cruz encampment in San Lorenzo Park, and that they were voting with their feet, so to speak, to stay in their tent, stay in a community where they didn't have to come and go and all this rigmarole just to spend a few hours sleeping on a mat in a large room, that they were better off at Occupy Santa Cruz. And, you know, Don Lane, by sweeping the camp, you know, maybe he got a little more business for the Homeless Services Center.
Well, I know
and
that
if that was his motivation, that's kind of
I know that Lane is a member of the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors. He still is on the board. And for the last year, we've been trying to get the executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, Monica Martinez, to agree to, if somebody gets a camping ticket, to write a letter to the court that says, hey, our shelter was full that night, if the shelter was full, which it always is in the summer and late spring and early fall. She's been refusing to do that after promising to do so explicitly and saying that she does it. And when I approached Lane to ask him to address this issue, he just sort of, you know, snidely turned away We'd have nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. We'll take no responsibility for it, even though he's in an advisory capacity for that whole board. He's, you know, he's on the board. He's a, he was the vice mayor at the time. Also, the
they're clearly frustrating people who are trying to get those letters.
What I'm saying, though, is that he seems to be, you know, this is this seems to be, he says one thing and he does another, which is really at the core of hypocrisy, particularly for political figures who are trying to, you know, persuade people and create the illusion that they are, you know, engaging in one course of conduct when in fact they're engaging in another. So, yeah, he also was, he refused to address this issue of, you know, why isn't Monica Martinez's homeless service center providing documentation if a person's on the waiting list so they can show it to a police officer, since there was a law passed last year that says if you're on a waiting list, police are required to dismiss any citations you get for sleeping. And he's refused to address that failing and actually...
Well, that's obviously they want to keep the move along in place, even if the ticket is ultimately dismissed.
I don't think I don't think he necessarily wants to keep the move along in place. I think he is overly deferential to the police. I think he is afraid. I think if there were a city council that actually, you know, favored ending the camping ordinance, and there was a city council that favored ending the laws against that made it criminal to sit downtown in 95% of the sidewalk, and made it criminal to hold up a sign after dark asking for a dime, made it that, you know, that favored ending these laws that make it illegal to sit on a park bench or to sit down next to a, I guess the penguin statues have been removed, haven't they? I'm not sure they heard.
Penguins have been removed, really?
Well, I'm told that there was little signs up, the penguins are leaving in December, or on December 9th or something.
Wow, good riddance.
Those are penguin statues up and down that create, again, forbidden zones for sitting, street performing, political tabling, and panhandling. I think Lane might actually take a different position if the council were different, but maybe not. What's your view of that? I mean, Lane is, you know, we saw it with Catherine Byers, who's also on the council, and who sometimes takes a somewhat dissenting role, but not really, not much, that she took a very serious dissenting role in the 90s, but then when it came to when she got a majority, when she was mayor in 1999, she turned around and supported the existing camping ordinance with a few modifications.
I don't see much hope from anyone on this council. You know, David Tarazos was really the only person I supported who is on the council now. And that was largely because of the support he got from People Power.
Mm-hmm. But do you think Don Lane, well, you know, it's hard to psychoanalyze. I'm trying to be, you know, to give Don the benefit, not the benefit of the doubt, but to try to honestly reflect on the whole person. I mean, you know, I didn't like Scott Kennedy and how he treated homeless people. I didn't like and the policies he supported, but I also had to acknowledge at certain points he did some things which were positive. Not overall, not in terms of the crushing weight of most of what he did. But I also want to
you mentioned earlier in your show about that you can't sit on the sidewalk 14 feet from a building.
14 feet from a crosswalk, 14 feet from a statue, 14 feet from a whole bunch of things.
Well, 10 feet from a statue and 14 feet from a building. But what I wanted to say that
no,
was
it's 14
the legacy
feet.
Of Scott
it's
Kennedy.
No, it's 14 feet from a statue for sitting. It's 10 feet for performing or... Go check the ordinance. Anyway,
that
could
well be true.
Yeah.
But it was Scott Kennedy who, when they were proposing changing it from 6 feet to either 12 feet or 14 feet, and Barasone said that both 12 feet and 14 feet would be legally defensible and considered constitutional. So Scott Kennedy said, well, if they're both safe and constitutional, then let's go for the 14 feet.
Again, we're not really talking about Kennedy, though. We're talking about Lane. But I'm trying to say that I'd like to give Lane, if we have positive stuff to say about him, because, I mean, he did spend, you know, a lot of time on this pious, you know, homeless speech. And let's hear a little bit more of it. You know, but I think...
It's a nice speech. It doesn't belie anything he supports or anything that he's willing to do.
Well, it does belie it, actually. He's making a speech that is in direct opposition to what he's doing and the laws he's enforcing and supporting. So, yeah, it belies what he does.
And the Homeless Services Center gets their major donations between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So,
It's like he's
a
fundraiser.
It's like
he's it's like he's a fundraiser for the Homeless Lack of Services Center. That's really, that's his project. That's what he's working on. And let's hear a little bit more. But I know he put a lot of focus into the homelessness action partnership, or the homeless action partnership, which, as I understand, is just the latest version of this, as I've described, this talkathon that is the 10-year plan to end homelessness, the thing that it meets every month, and it provides a sort of a cover for people who are seeking grants from the government, supposedly to address homeless issues, but who never expand emergency shelter in any meaningful way or address the criminalization of poor people. It's simply kind of it's panhandling by certain nonprofit agencies to minimally help homeless people while serving their own interests. Is my fear. Well, what do you think about that?
Lane does address the criminalization of homelessness later on, so you might want to play that.
I will play that, but I've looked over the speech, mm-hmm. and he may talk about it, but when you ask him if he'll do anything about it, the answer is always no. And if you look at his record, you see he always votes for these criminalization measures. So mm-hmm. I think it is somebody needs to shout bullshit in the middle of his speech, because if it's complete bullshit if he says one thing and does another, that's all. I'll play a little bit more of it.
Another thing about this grumpy-looking guy, he's also the guy I've heard some people in the community characterize as living an easy life. I'd like to talk about that typical guy living that so-called easy life. Every time he wants to eat, he stands in a long line to eat off a cafeteria tray, or he stands on the street and waits for someone to act with generosity, or he pulls something out of a trash can, or he opens a can of something cheap. Every time he needs to go to the bathroom, he goes to a public toilet, or a bush, or an alley. When he seeks a bed to sleep in, he often lingers on a waiting list for weeks just to get a dorm bed for a brief period before his time to stay runs out. Every time he goes to sleep outside at night, he knows he's potentially exposed to both a citation and to the predators that prey on vulnerable people.
And every time he gets together with homeless folks in order to form a protective community encampment, Santa Cruz police will come after him, and Don Lane will say absolutely nothing except he supports what they're doing.
Right.
He can't go inside and shut the door. Every time it rains, he finds a place under an overhang, pulls a plastic tarp over himself, or crawls into an old tent. When he's soaked to the bone, he doesn't have anywhere to go to dry off. He has nowhere secure to keep all his belongings except in the bag or on his back or in his hand. If he wants a shower, he waits in line for a long time, then showers with only a minimal sense of privacy. Everywhere he goes, a lot of people either scowl at him or look the other way just because he appears to be homeless. When he needs money, he stands near a parking lot driveway with a sign for hours to come up with 20 or 30 bucks, or maybe nothing.
And, of course, he doesn't stand in the parking lot because Don Lane has supported the parking lot panic law, or at least he hasn't opposed it in any public way, the law that makes it illegal to be in a parking lot unless you're parking a vehicle or walking through the parking lot. What's your thoughts on that, Becky?
Well, that was Ryan Coonerty's baby. I don't remember Don Lane having a very active role in that. Don Lane was one of, Don and Ryan spearheaded the smoking ban, which at least the anecdotal data I have is that it's being very selectively enforced against homeless people.
Thanks, Becky.
When he drinks too much, he passes out on the ground or on a bench. He doesn't have a living room couch. When he cries, he does it in public, because he has no private house or apartment or room to go to. When he has a serious health issue, it's more likely to be fatal, since the life expectancy of a homeless person in our society is about 30 years shorter than for housed people. This is the so-called easy life of a person living on the street. So I respectfully request that we reconsider assumptions about that easy life of a homeless person and have a more serious conversation about the realities of homelessness. Life on the street almost always sucks, even if there is some free food. And we do not have to admire the person living on the street or even feel particularly sympathetic to recognize that his life is very difficult. Now that I've said this, I know some people will start to tune me out. Don is just a bleeding heart intent on making it easy for freeloaders. They tell me all we need to do is make those people go away. This is a surprisingly common suggestion in a community that prides itself on understanding sustainability. When we think about all the stuff we say we are throwing away or flushing away or washing away, we all know there's no actual place called away. The stuff we say we are throwing away is in a landfill right here in our community. The stuff we're flushing away is ending up in the ocean right on our front doorstep. The stuff we are washing away is flowing right into our local waterways. There is no away. When it comes to people, it works the same way. Pushing people away doesn't mean they disappear. It means they move some distance, maybe a few blocks, maybe a few miles away, maybe a few cities away. They still exist, and if they were homeless when they were pushed away, they'll still be homeless. Some hear this and say, aha, at least if we push them a few cities away, we won't have to deal with them or see them. That's a nice try, but we don't live in a vacuum. Those other cities having adopted the same approach will be pushing homeless people away too, and some of the ones they push away will end up here.
Of course, that's true, but the fact is, you know, what about the laws that currently are on the books that do just that, that push people out of public spaces, that criminalize them from sleeping at night, that justify the police destroying their tents, that restrict them and criminalize them for protesting about this in organized groups, as Occupy Santa Cruz did?
Well,
and is
Robert,
trying to
don't
do.
Forget that when we listened to testimony at the Palo Alto City Council, when they were passing their sit-lie law, that they said, well, Santa Cruz has a similar law, and they're very liberal, so if they could pass it, it certainly wouldn't be bad for us to pass it.
And the point is that Don Lane, who is now the mayor, is expressing no opposition to any of the current laws in Santa Cruz that do exactly what he says is wrong. That's why this speech is such a farce at some level, even though it sounds very eloquent. You know, if you gave this speech, I would be applauding because you've been spending your life fighting these laws, Becky. You know, even if, you know, somebody like Father Joel Miller, who's in an ambivalent position for some respects, because he drove away homeless people from his church he restricted the policies that a more liberal Rene Curry had in place a couple years ago, but he still maintains an attempt to maintain some kind of homeless ministry. I mean, it's just somebody like Don Lane claiming to be a friend of the homeless with this kind of speech. Unless we can look forward, unless you anticipate, Becky, there's going to be some kind of change with Lane that actually talks about putting some muscle behind all these pious concerns and ending the support for police department policies that actually do this kind of criminalization of the poor.
I'm not predicting that. At the most, he might be able to reverse some of the social service gutting that was done with Ryan under Ryan Coonerty. He might get that restored.
You know, it also should be said that there's been no change in the power structure on the city council. There is still a Coonerty majority. What do you got? Coonerty, Teresis, Bryant, and Robinson are in the majority, and in the minority is Byers, Madrigal, and Lane, but all of whom support the anti-homeless laws generally, so there's not even that real division. But in the social service issue, there is that division. I'll play a little bit more of this speech because we're reaching the end of it. Before I do, any more comments, Becky?
It just seems very two-faced to me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think, too. Anything coming up that we should know about? I know that you attended the homeless memorial and you recorded it. It's kind of hard to hear because we had this little handheld tape recorder, and I'm not really going to be playing it, but did you notice anything there that was of any note that you want to talk about before I finish off this Lane speech?
Well, just the, you know, the raw numbers. Last year there were 30 homeless deaths. This year, 24. However, last year, 20 of the deaths were in the city of Santa Cruz, and this year, 20 of the deaths were in the city of Santa Cruz. So if you look at that, you can say, well, the city of Santa Cruz is doing the worst of all the areas in the county and have done absolutely nothing to prevent the really terrible toll that these homeless deaths are.
Yeah, except it's really hard to, you know, I mean, the county has 250,000 people and the city has 55,000 people. And the claim that, you know, there are 20 deaths in the city and four additional deaths in the county, to me, is highly unlikely. I just don't believe that. I think that's, you know, an example of the fact maybe the city has paid people who are there, who are more likely to get the count from the city and are paying less attention to the county. What do you think?
It's hard to say. It could be that there are a lot of unreported deaths that we just didn't get the data on and weren't included in the total. It could be that certain vulnerable populations like Vietnam vets or something that have pretty much died off. Just the raw statistics do not make the city look well at all.
Thanks, Becky, and thanks for, you know, taking the time to come on the air. I'm going to, for the last 5 minutes, play the rest of, well, we're going to play part of Lane's speech. For those who want to read it, it is in the Sentinel. I noticed the Sentinel did bother to print it, and I don't think they printed Coonerty's speech or Rotkin's speech in the past years. So it's an interesting change. I guess they regarded it as print-worthy because it's quite eloquent. If only it were a reflection of his real policies, it would be great, you know, but it isn't.
It is quite eloquent.
Yeah,
and I think maybe it's pitched to for the real right-wing people. Maybe that's where it's coming from, to give it its best light.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to sign off.
Thank you, Becky.
I'll be listening in.
All
Thanks,
right.
Robert.
All righty. And you can tune to Becky's, or check out Becky's website, BeckyJohnsonOneWomanTalking.blogspot.com, to get a lot of very specific and interesting articles on the struggle for homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz.
So we have to stop this pointless and unproductive vicious cycle and get serious. What does getting serious look like? This is where I hope I might surprise a few people. I know getting serious about homelessness also means recognizing the challenges to the rest of the community of having hundreds of people living on the street. Homelessness does harm business. Seeing homelessness does make some people afraid or uneasy. Homelessness does cost our community money, and homelessness has caused physical and environmental damage to many public and private places. So this isn't a plea to do what advocates of homeless services and programs want. Tonight I'm not proposing new services or new programs or new laws. I know I'm not going to solve the problem of homelessness by proposing one new program or new law, and neither is any other individual in this community. For me, getting serious about the problem of homelessness means engaging the entire community in addressing this problem. Lord knows it's time. For 35 years I've been involved in public life in Santa Cruz, homelessness has been one of our top controversies and top challenges year in and year out. Yet somehow local government and local community members rarely seem to have the will to come together to air the issues out. Santa Cruz has done nothing in 35 years. Different segments of the community play ping pong with the issue. Sometimes the idea of cracking down gets a leg up, and other times the approach of providing new programs wins the day. Those wanting to minimize the visible impacts of homelessness come forward to pass laws and increase law enforcement. Those wanting to provide assistance to homeless individuals develop the new programs and facilities.
and Don Lane votes for all of it, including the crackdowns.
Facilities, each side of that process often sees the other side as unhelpful, yet they seldom get together to work out coherent policies for the community. Today, I'm advocating that we work together as an entire community to do just that, develop a coherent set of policies. Let me tell you what I have in mind. There are many things in place to launch a healthier discussion in which in turn can lead to intelligent policy development. There's an excellent organization in place in Santa Cruz called the Homeless Action Partnership. It already functions as a place of collaboration among agencies that provide key services.
This is hogwash, folks. This group does not do anything significant that I'm aware of. But, you know, I'm going to give Don an opportunity to give me some concrete specifics about what it's doing in terms of making meaningful changes, because I will be interviewing Lane in the next week or two. Again, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're going to play a little bit more of the speech. And when Uncle Dennis comes on the air, he has a comment or two that he'll make about some of the stuff that we've heard.
To the homeless of our community. The Homeless Action Partnership does the homeless census. It's the organization that pulls together the local government jurisdictions to provide winter shelter in Watsonville and Santa Cruz. It's the organization that coordinates our county's
token winter shelter while the police destroy the really meaningful winter shelter that homeless people provided for themselves.
To secure federal funding for homeless programs. And it's the organization that has developed and continues to develop long-range plans for working towards reducing and eliminating homelessness in our area. It's actually doing a very good job, except for one big thing.
Actually, it's not doing a very good job. It's not. It plans itself to death, but creates nothing new. And that is, unfortunately, the fact in the last 20 years in this city. And this is simply a successor group to the continuum of care. Lane isn't telling you this.
It has not been engaging all of us, the entire community, in developing and implementing those plans for reducing and eliminating homelessness. Without community involvement and community input, its progress will be limited. But I'm happy to report tonight that this is starting to change. I've been working with the Homeless Action Partnership.
And rather than hear more commercials for the Homeless Action Partnership, which this is really is, this is a big plea to send more money to the Homeless Action Partnership, involve yourself more with these particular group of social service providers. I'll be back on Sunday to discuss more of these issues and hopefully provide some voices that don't get heard and don't get reprinted in the Sentinel the way Don Lane does. Tune in then or reach me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or check out the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly, which is still happening in the shivering cold, 6 to, well, sometimes to 8, sometimes to 7:30, in defiance of the county's curfew on the First Amendment at the county building and the county property there at the courthouse. Thanks for being with me in this edition of Bathroom Spheres Broadsides. Dennis, you had some thoughts. I'll turn the mic over to you.
Well, as a Vietnam veteran myself, I just want to say that there has been a significant and hopefully ongoing action by the Veterans Department to actually outreach to homeless veterans and get them employed, housed, health, get them health care. What I wanted to say is that not all government agencies are ignoring the homeless, and it's not only Vietnam veterans that have homelessness problems. It's all veterans from all the wars, and so let's stop war. Maybe we can stop homelessness that way.
Hey, I'll buy that. You were also saying that the vets are. That the vets aren't dying off. That's not the reason that there are supposedly less homeless deaths. This
no, year. They're getting more help. Is my point that
the closing of the vets hall.
Well, the closing of the vets hall was unfortunate. My understanding is that it wasn't it wasn't anything trying, any action by the county trying to actually deny the veterans a place to be. It's just that they had a real problem with the structure. Now, you know, that's
something the vets engineers disagreed with.
There was a disagreement about it, but at this point,
it's an academic.
My understanding is that there's going to be a contract let to fix it, if not rebuild it.
A couple of years down the road.
Yeah, well, there's that. Anyway. All I have to say is that Robert will be back on Sunday morning at 9:30, unless he freezes to death in his mansion on the hill.
In my swimming